for rock solid football action.
Hi, I'm Tom Savage, professional musician and songwriter and host of Leave It All on the Stage. This CFRC radio show and podcast series explores the challenges of the working musician in the 21st century, while also identifying the many joys inherent in the artist's life. Episodes feature special guests discussing a range of topics, and whether you're new to the music scene, a veteran performer, or a music fan, there's something here for you. Music equals life. Thanks for joining us. The only constant in this world is change. And in the music business, those changes can come fast and furious. Technology adding to the demands on artists' time, turning everyone into content creators while stealing their revenue. Looking at you, Spotify, to venues closing at a feverish rate all across the country, to Ticketmaster driving up costs so much that major concert tours are being canceled due to bouts of, quote, blue dot fever. However, there are bright spots where a little hope for the future trickles in, and they can be found in your local scene, where it is still quite affordable to buy a ticket and go out to see a show. In Kingston, two people play a huge part in bringing a ton of quality acts in a wide range of genres and levels of prominence to this town, and they are guests on this show today. Virginia Clark is the engine behind Flying V Productions, and has been bringing amazing concerts to Kingston for decades. She is also co-founder of the Wolf Island Music Festival and is the music co-curator for the brand new Road Trip Music Festival taking place this September in Kingston. Mark Garnes is co-founder of KPP Concerts and Spring Reverb Festival. He serves as the executive director of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival and is largely responsible for the existence of one of Kingston's most happening new live music venues, the Broom Factory. You guys have a lot going on?
No, we're
need
pretty
more.
Bored.
Yeah.
give us more stuff to do.
Yeah, you need more stuff. It seems like you need more stuff to do. But, so I invited you on this show so you could have a little extra thing to do. So
3 hours, let's do it.
Yeah, no, just thinking about you guys. So, well, thanks for being on the show, and we're gonna talk music promotion in the 21st century. I don't know about you, but like the 21st century still seems futuristic to me every
sci-fi.
Time I say it.
Yeah.
You ever,
we're all of a certain age. People that are,
yeah, you ever think like when you were a kid, it's like, How old am I going to be in the year 2000?
Oh, I thought there was going to be flying saucers for sure.
Yeah.
Zinging around.
Y2K.
Yeah.
PTSD still.
Yeah. It was tough times. But wanted to ask you, like, to reflect on, because you've both been at it for a long time, like, back in the day compared to now with all these tech changes and online ticketing and social media, just offer a comparison between back in the day, what sort of pre-internet to now. Verge, if you want to go first.
Go to the oldest first. Well, I have been reminiscing about it because in the old days, I was actually talking to an artist about, and a young artist, just saying, you know, back in the old days, I used to have to carry an actual photo and a CD and a little paper bio to the Queen's Journal to like get some coverage on the concert because, you know, we didn't have to send a, you know, digital link to anybody. I didn't even have email back then.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even have an email. So everything was done on the phone. You know, it was all like kind of in trust that things were going to happen. And then the fax machine was pretty handy.
Oh, the fax machine.
Things, yeah. And going down to the print shop here at Queens and faxing documents, you know, contracts and stuff like that. So very different, you know, than today. It's just so high speed. It's so like instantaneous. It's so 24/7. Where back then things were kind of spaced out and kind of done.
A little slower,
a little more obviously organic. Everyone was going by your taste factor of who you were inviting to come play. versus like what's got the most listens on Spotify.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it was that no one had that.
Well, you were trusted as
the, a curator.
Yeah, the curator.
Yeah. And the CFRC was always a great hand on that too, because they always played that kind of music. You know, it was listeners. It wasn't just streamers. So it was a little bit different back then. That's all I, you know.
Yeah. And now.
Well, like I said, it's like pretty instant, you know, gratification. It's all about like kind of, and I think Mark can contest to this, is sort of like listenership is like what, how many listens are on a streaming service, which
that,
to me
well,
doesn't.
I know that factors into like any festival booking and anything like unfairly, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Being the artist, it's no one listens to me on Spotify, so it's not a non-factor to me.
Well,
but,
it is. It can be. It's kind of lazy. It's sort of lazy curation, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't actually think Spotify really quantifies the live performance
or the draw. Yeah,
exactly. So they could have millions of listens, but they can also buy those listens.
So you take that into account when you're.
Oh yeah.
You're like
100%.
Well, what's really happening?
Yeah.
Of MySpace friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The MySpace. Oh, yeah. MySpace. Oh, yeah.
It was a major indicator for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My next album's going to be released exclusively on MySpace.
Managed by Tom?
Yeah. Yeah. Tom.
Tom managing.
Yeah. Tom. I just thought of that guy's
Tom
photo.
Representing Tom.
Yeah.
Well, how about you, Mark? Reflections on that?
I think. You know, just everything's digital now. Whereas I guess if you're talking, you know, 2000 or earlier, like a lot of shows were booked on the phone. And I remember because the City of Kingston, they're doing a poster exhibit in City Hall this coming summer. So we handed over some of our old poster files, and just the number of posters that were actually designed by a local designer and then printed by a printer in town, and just that whole process too. Like even the nowadays, most times when we book a bigger band, they'll have like a single AdMat file that's used for the entire tour. So yeah. I feel like some of the local kind of flavor and curation is now taken out of the process, and it's a little bit more homogenized, I think, across the board. So I really loved some of those old posters. And I remember bands sometimes coming to Kingston and seeing the Kingston poster, obviously for the first time when they stepped into the venue, and then having a reaction to it. And usually it being good, but, you know, sometimes them being like, oh, like that's a weird choice that you made there. And it was never ended bad or anything, but just that whole process now where like even... You know, you're even kind of micromanaged down to like the fonts that you sometimes use on a poster. So if somebody thinks that a poster is crap, nowadays I will say like we had very little to do with that.
Yeah, it gets around.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, and more of the DIY posters like before digital tools of like these sort of scrapbooky collage type cutouts of things. And this friend of mine in Oshawa, he's put together a really cool book about that, just a collection of all... There was a promoter in Oshawa, London area that for years and years, and like he would do that kind of postering, and he became known for this kind of cutout old school postering, but it was like it was an old school time. But it was interesting to look back on that because we were playing up in Oshawa, and well, you guys know Bones Bowring, who's, you know, back in the day with
Prize.
Yeah, Guyana Kool-Aid and Prize.
Mm.
And so there was this exhibit in this place, Bond Street Events in Oshawa. And so seeing all these posters, and Bones was like, hey, it's the Prize. It's like from...
Yeah.
I don't know, 1990 or whatever.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So, yeah, that's definitely a big change. So you guys deal with artists on multiple levels, different stages of their careers. Have you heard any, like, similarities in difficulties that these artists have with touring, with promotion, say an artist that will draw 500 to an artist that will draw 100, that kind of just difficulties with the scene as it is now, like the touring scene and tour and promotion. I've been reading a lot about like just ticket sales issues and just problems with I don't see it from you guys. Like when you put on a show, you're solid. Like you're gonna do that show. But as I mentioned in the intro, the Blue Dot Fever for like that's like big acts, mm-hmm. And I think that I feel like that's a problem with Ticketmaster and the driving up the cost so much that people are. Well, I don't want to pay $500 to go see this show, and then so that's different. But like on my level, like say DIY level, I feel there's a hesitancy to buy advance tickets, and really, I mean, with Dead Root Revival, we kind of escaped this issue. But I've been reading about it for a few years, where like say you're a week or two out, the venue or the promoter gets a twitchy. And we're not selling. We haven't hit that benchmark, so we're dropping the show.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's happened to us a few times this year. But you ever talk to guys about that, different bands or anything?
Maybe a little bit. I think like Kingston's a little unique. I can really only speak to Kingston. I know there's probably other markets out there that we're similar to, but I think every market has their own flavor as well. And I think a blessing and curse of Kingston is that we're so spoiled, I think, in some ways, in that a lot happens here for the size of Kingston. Like I would say, what would be a comparable, maybe like Windsor or Barrie or some city that's the same size of Kingston. I bet if you look at their concert listings, they would not have the quantity and quality that we have here. So Kingston, you know, for a number of reasons, I think we're a little spoiled. And with that, I think my parents live in a very small town, and whenever there's a concert, I don't think it matters who's on the poster. They just say culture coming to town, and people will go consume that culture for $30 or whatever.
Yeah.
But in Kingston, I think, you know, like Verge did an amazing show last night, and I think was hoping for a few more bodies there.
Handful of people.
Bands got like from members of, you know, fairly famous band type thing. And probably some people sitting at home on their couch and being like, well, you know, I'm looking at the rest of Verge's shows coming up and some of the ones that Mark has coming up. And, you know,
we only have so much audience.
I only have so much time and money. And, you know, I'm maybe exhausted from the show I saw on the weekend, and I'm going to something this coming weekend too. So it's a bit of a good problem
to have.
Yeah, because like, I just had a sold-out show at the Spire, you know, like 700 some people, right? So it's sort of like such a just, you know, one extreme to the other. But I think what's nice is that I've never dropped a show due to lack of sales. It's been more on the artist saying, I don't want to come because I haven't sold the tickets. So they dropped. I've only had it like happen once, and it was on the artist side. I still persevere.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Like, but it is what it is, because I believe in investing in artists too. So that's going to build their audience as we go. Maybe it's not going to be a one-off at a venue. It might be at a festival, because Mark and I are both diverse enough that we can help build audiences with our festivals that we curate, right? So if it's not going to be a one-off at a venue, it's going to be maybe down the road we're going to put them at a festival. So that's the beauty of being like multidimensional in this kind of role, because when you're just doing one venue, promoting, like it's very, you have to kind of multifaceted, I think. Mm-hmm. And also,
you kind of have a long-term approach if you're dealing with someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, what Mark was saying about the so many things in Kingston, I've now moved shows to Belleville, mm-hmm. Corbyville, to the Signal Brewery. And I tell you, they're so thankful. They're like, thank you for bringing these kind of concerts to Belleville. And like, where I'm like, this is just what I normally bring to Kingston. So they just seem very appreciative of a theater. And they do have some festivals happening now. So it's starting to happen there now.
In Belleville?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I play Belleville like once a year, once or twice a year. But I think Signal's great.
Yeah, and they're very appreciative. Like the town itself, I don't know these people. Like they just randomly come up to me and go, I've been waiting for this band to come through Belleville. Like I had Mountainhead there. And they're like, we don't have to go to Kingston to see Mountainhead. We can see them in our hometown.
But yeah, it's interesting, like, you almost think that's the same market, but I mean, from my experience, I found I can have a Belleville crowd and a Kingston crowd and a Gananoque crowd sometimes, even though it's like 20 minutes, but it's like, it's a different vibe. It's because it's just like this small town kind of, like you said, when culture comes to the small town, they're like, well, I don't care, I'm going.
Well, gas is expensive these days. Like gas is a real thing. Yeah. You know, gas price, like an hour's drive there and back, it's kind of far.
If Kingston had no shows, I think, well, I don't know how many people from Kingston are driving over to Belleville.
There's nobody.
Probably not
like,
a ton.
Not many,
know if they wait a few months, that
they'll come to Kingston,
Kingston. So, yeah, it's probably in a way then helping even for your future Kingston show with that band. Mm-hmm. You know, if 50 people have learned about them in Belleville, you know, they would maybe come to Kingston the next.
Yeah, I mean, I brought Tiny Horse there.
Well, that was the night that I was at the Broom Factory with Dead Revival.
But that's right. Yeah. I worked your show, and then I had my assistant Jack work the Belleville show, and they had a great crowd, and they weren't from Kingston, you know, and that's a Kingston band going to Belleville, so it helps Kingston artists.
No, it's great. And it gives you options, too, because when bands routing their tour, if you can't find room for them
in Kingston, because the venues are limited now here, we can maybe move them there. So yeah, it's a good option, and I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, they were flailing a bit at Signal before. I mean, we went in and did a couple of shows there, but it was kind of scattershot. Less organized, so
well, they're not music promoters, right? There's a there is actually a
there is
a reason why we exist. Like, there's more than just putting a poster up, you know. There's like the day of show production and the marketing and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's not just like, oh, come on over and play, you know, and I'll put a poster up a couple of places. It's a lot more than
Let's talk about that for our young budding music promoters, and well, even for myself, because
you're good.
I do my thing.
Yeah, you're very good.
Give me your tricks.
There's no tricks.
Yeah, I don't know,
Mark.
I think
secret sauce.
What are my tricks? I don't know if I have any, but I do really think it's more than just spending $1,000 on Meta. Which is like, I'm not being facetious. It's the strategy for a lot of promoters, especially now that there's more like mini Live Nations that are starting up too. That are like, oh, we'll book a show in like Sudbury and then Ottawa and then Windsor, and they don't have any contacts in any of those markets. But
they just,
Meta doesn't care. They'll, you know, they can target their ads and sometimes be very effective, and but other times, not so much.
What do you do for advertising?
I mean, we sometimes do that. We usually don't spend $1,000 on Meta.
No.
But you know, sometimes we'll do that, and it kind of depends on the demographic of the artist as well. Like, there's some artists I think that are a bit more conducive to promoting on Facebook versus Instagram, so you can get a little bit granular that way. And you know, I think the older demo,
Facebook
might still be on Facebook more than Instagram and things like that. But I don't know. When I was just out of town for a couple of weeks, and when we go to new cities, I'm always looking around for posters. I know we were just talking about that. I still think a lot of people learn about a city's music scene through posters, because you maybe don't know where to go. So I still think that's very important. You know, I think Virgin and I have both built up a mailing list from people that have attended our past shows. And so those are people that, you know, have bought a ticket with you before. So we really lean into that. I think, what else do we do? There's CFRC, obviously, has been a partner since year one for the festival and still to this day, you know? And, so it's, I think, important to get bands in like talking to people like yourself and radio hosts and partnering with groups like CFRC, or, you know, sometimes if it's a skate punk band we have, maybe we'll partner with BSE downtown and they have their own following because of their coffee shop and clothing store. And
that's a good idea. Contests, yeah.
And tickets, or, you know, sometimes Virgin and I'll work together on a show too. So mm-hmm. There's lots of different ways to do it. But I think the idea that you can sell a show out on Meta, while sure that can work, I think it's a bit lazy. I think you're probably going to undersell the artist. So
I think it'd be like hit and miss.
Yeah,
probably.
I would bet all the money I have that if Verge promoted band A and the same band was promoted by, I won't mention a out of town promoter, but one that does shows in all these different markets, Verge is going to get the bigger draw because they can both do Meta, but this other promoter can't do all these other things. And I think it's also when bands show up, they see things like posters and the smaller things as well and appreciate that.
Yeah. Verge, anything to add to that?
I think just going off what Mark was saying about the kind of Meta versus local kind of individuals, I feel like the community connection is huge, just as that person that brings things to your community. And being out there in the community and just literally face-to-face talking to people about things, and they see me and go, what do you have coming up, Verge? You know, it's more than just... Because we did it before Meta existed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's old school kind of just actual community. And the trust factor of like, oh, I don't know this band, but I'm going to check it out. You know what I mean? With our mailing lists, that's really helps a lot. Just having that, you know, little mailing when we announce something or something like that, that someone from Toronto is not going to have, you know,
yeah,
that resource. But I do think the community, like Wolf Island, is just this unique kind of space. You know it, Tom, quite well.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the people, they'll come to that festival. It's small now. I brought it down to a very small, it's a hall party now. It's not the large scale festival it used to be. And I love it because half of it's just my neighbors coming, checking it out. They don't know the bands, you know. It's just sort of like...
It's a good party vibe.
It's a party vibe. They trust that it's going to be fun. I had Holy F, I'll say, last year. And I mean, they're kind of veterans, you know, that have played the festival years back but hadn't come to Kingston in a really long time. And the people were like, the young people and the older people were like, who are these guys? This is amazing.
They're like, holy...
Yeah. So and now they're like just sold out San Francisco. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like I love the like introducing new music to people. Yeah. And that's the beauty of festivals, right? Too, is like those sort of bands that you want to like kind of introduce people to, or even just like locally just doing shows like here, please listen to these guys, come out and check them out. Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like you're the kind of person that's curating it and saying, that's the way I see it, is it's a curation. And then Mark does the same thing. He does a really good job at it. And it's sort of like, check it out. Trust me. It's good. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you've gained a reputation where people know when you're putting on a show, they'll pay more attention to that than to kind of a more faceless out-of-town promoter that has no connection to the area. So when I see you announce a show,
you're like,
on
who's
your mailing
this?
List,
yeah.
I don't always know who they are, but I'll feel like it's my fault for not knowing who they are, or or I ought to learn.
Pay attention to this person or this band.
So I think, you know, you'll do all genres, but I feel like people can kind of get a sense as to what your shows are going to feel like, and hopefully the same for KPP. Used to be all punk and hardcore stuff back in the day. And actually, you know what, when we did that, we definitely had a lot of kids or people showing up to shows just being like, I don't have any idea who these bands are. And that's kind of where we came from,
but we
know it's going to be a certain style and it's going to feel a certain way. And I think
you're still doing like quite
a few
of
that's
our thing. We still like, but thankfully those shows it's a little bit cyclical, I find, with that genre, but like lately people seem my age are now bringing their kids out to those shows.
That's awesome.
How's that whole scene doing? Like,
it's doing well.
Yeah.
That genre is done, I would say, like, you know,
really well.
Using like coming out of COVID as the the sample size, it's been quite good.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, not that I've experienced it, but like metal, maybe hard to find venues to do that kind of stuff, but there's like metal and punk scenes that kind of have like followings of like just whatever it is. I was like, if there's a metal show, I'm like, oh, like the metal
very
heads.
Passionate.
Yeah, the very passionate. Yeah. Yeah.
Merch sales, like for 25 years for me, it's been consistent. That's the, it's, merch sales are always double or triple at merch and punk shows. Everybody will buy a shirt or a record, where sometimes the indie shows, it's like, you know, it's kind of more band dependent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm more the indie girl.
Yeah. I know you're the indie girl. But you do other.
I do all kinds. Like,
you're folking it up.
Oh, I'm folking it up. But there's indie folk, though,
yeah.
Tom.
Well, I know there's indie folk.
There's indie everything.
Yeah.
Every genre is in.
There's
an
all.
Indie,
there's all kinds of
it.
This,
yeah.
Slash,
indie
this
pop,
slash
indie,
this slash this slash.
Yeah. Yeah.
But well, yeah. Well, just the Spire recently. That's would that be that indie folk? Half Moon Run.
I wouldn't say folk.
Pop.
I don't know the
let's
genre.
Let's categorize.
Well, they're so good. They were amazing.
Popular,
yeah, they're amazing. I just
well.
Would. I'm so bad at giving bands genres or pigeonholing them into like one type of.
Yeah, well, that's
like,
fine.
Really bad at that, but I wouldn't say they're folk.
Yeah.
I don't know what I don't
like
know.
Metal or
no.
Atmospheric,
yeah.
Indie folk rock.
Can you Google that for me, Medina?
Play a song for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, play
seconds.
A Half Moon Run song for us, please. I don't know how to singer songwriter poppy kind of rock.
Well, when you, the as musicians, you're always like, what's your elevator pitch? You got to put it down into this thing, which. Yeah, that pisses me off.
I can't do it. I'm really bad at it. Yeah. I can't do it. So
good music.
Yeah, it's good.
Good music.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trust.
Put out enough albums. They're gonna hit all the genres eventually.
But, Dinah's got the. What are they known for? What is it?
Indie rock, indie pop, folk.
Oh, there is folk in there. All right. There are a lot of indies in there. Indie rock, indie folk. There's three different genres there.
That's
so
every genre that's ever
existed. I get a pass. I get a pass on that one.
Yeah. We were in the zone.
We're all right.
We're in the zone.
Yeah.
But, so just shifting it to local talent. Giving a space for local talent. Yeah, you guys do that with opening slots a lot. And Mark with Spring Reverb, quite a bit of local talent on that, eh?
It's about half, about 50%. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to dwell on how we're so much better than these out-of-town promoters, but I will a little bit more.
It's CFRC. Don't worry about it.
Every time. Hopefully Live Nation isn't existing. And
no, I mean, we're
crush
we're,
us
it's
all.
Okay promoting Kingston, I mean. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Right. However, I will point out, I won't even say it's KPP. I'll say Flying V. But any opportunity we have, we're advocating for local bands to fill that first of three. You know, no offense to the band from Oshawa, but like we would rather, if there's going to be a new band that we're trying to develop, usually the second, if it's a three band package, the second band's usually a touring band. So if we can have one spot for a local band, that's great. I find with out of town promoters, they don't seem to have that same MO where they're trying to necessarily, I don't think I've ever seen a Live Nation show in Kingston with a local band opening up. That has probably objectively never happened.
They have someone on the tour.
Yeah.
Which always
happens,
but you can.
Yeah.
But agents will listen to us to a point. Like we can advocate, especially for a smaller show where we're like, hey, a local band's really going to help this show out. You know, they've got like 20, 30 other buddies and they're going to hustle and they're really good. And, you know, so they will listen to us to a point. And so we can make a case for it. Whereas like, yeah, that's just not happening for other promoters that don't have that local connection.
Yeah. Do you deal with a lot of the same agents that stick around for a while, or is there a lot of turnover on that?
I guess both kind of.
Both. Yeah. You kind of get allocated an agent per agency a lot of the time, where you, even though the bands may be represented by other agents, that person's your point person that you talk to. So that makes it a bit easier. you know, when you just have that one. And it's a trust factor too. Like, they trust me, I trust them. It's very important. It's very important. So
any crazy stories of weird demands?
Nonstop
weird demands.
I'll tell one very, very, very famous band. I won't say who they were, but on their rider was cashew juice, and I could not find cashew juice in Kingston at that point. I don't know if it's here or not. But
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Or like weed on riders, like way before it was legal. I remember. Yeah. Like you're kind of asking me to break the law, but we'll see what I can do.
I've never had that.
Yeah.
And now it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Now
no problem.
It. It's legal. They can get that with their buyout.
Edibles. I've actually never had that. So yeah. Thankfully.
Sometimes like Colorado, they'd always want a dog to pet or walk.
Oh, yeah. Nico Case wanted a dog. Yeah, she wanted a dog.
Yeah, they're on tour. They're
That's
like
interesting.
Yeah, I brought a dog from the Humane Society for Nico Case. Yeah. And she gave me an envelope of like money that she gave to the Humane Society, like for the dogs. And she was really wanting to adopt it, but it would have been a bit difficult. But
to take on the road with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mostly it's just hummus
normal.
And
it's
chips
hummus and
or like you'll get a rider that's kind of like their Lollapalooza rider, and the stuff at the bottom is just like they know they're not going to get it either. Like,
yeah.
Well, it kind of comes down to like, do you want to be paid extra money or do you want to start this
like,
cashew thing? That's
it's like they're paying for that. Right.
In the end, many of the shows does well. And there's
like it goes in the expenses.
It goes in the expenses. So it's a show cost. Yeah. There's another person I won't mention who sometimes tours with a band and sometimes tours solo, and sent us the rider. And it was spicy. It was like $600-$700 worth of stuff. And we're like,
solo.
Are you sure you didn't send us the one with the band? Because this is like, there's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm like, nope, this is the rider. I'm like, great.
You
showed it well.
10 bags of chips.
yeah, like many towels, like a lot. And then so we got it down to a T, and they came in and took the thing of chicken salad and a thing of buns back to their bus and left everything else. Like
what
five,
a waste.
That's so wasteful.
What a waste.
Well, it was, but like, I mean, we ate for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hummus and chips.
On their dime.
Yeah. Or used it for the next show where the band didn't have a rider, you know? So, but
I always try and make sure the band takes the food with them. I hate the waste.
Yeah.
Like, I hate seeing that just like, oh, don't need it. No, you're taking.
Yeah.
I bought you taking this with you. I don't care what you do with it. You're taking it with you. Like,
yeah.
These apples, these bananas, whatever it is. Like, yeah. I won't let them. I hate that when they just leave it.
I hate trying out salsa at the end of the night and soggy carrots.
Yeah. Gross. Yeah. I've never really been in that world. And so it's like, while occasionally do a gig where there's a rider or they give you a buyout or something to go, like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is weird to me.
Really? It's pretty normal.
I know it's normal, but yeah. I'm so like
it can be
grassroots DIY.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
for sure,
a lot of the time, you know, setting up the sound and working the door and it's like, let's order a pizza.
Yeah.
It's just, it's interesting to me.
Well,
you kind of run into
costs
that
when you're not doing all
kind
of the.
Yeah,
it's kind of all coming out of the, you know,
your
the
pocket.
At the end, it's like if you're spending all your money, like $600 on catering, yeah, like what you mentioned a minute ago, that's money that's probably mostly going to be going back into your pocket at the end of the night. Anyway,
yeah, so it's I kind of liken it to the big record deal with the tour bus and everything. It's like, oh, look at this tour bus. It's like, yeah, you're paying like what, 10 grand a day or whatever it is for that bus and the driver. So
and
enjoy
you go in the
it.
Hole for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some very famous bands, they got smart and they just got a van and a trailer and they could have been having a bus and spent all that money. But they didn't. And, you know, they still have a bank account with money in it, you know, when they're retired. So it's sort of like thinking about it that way and not overspending on your tour. But that, I mean, that's up to the artist.
Yeah.
It's their call.
You could get caught up in that wave where it's like young rock and rollers. Like, wow.
But when you work with a good local promoter as well, like who has deals with breweries and hotels and restaurants, you're also going to be getting these things sometimes for free. Like Virgin, I think both have partners that can sometimes offer product to a show where it's not going to cost anything, where other promoters may not have that deal in place in Kingston, like, you know, so hotels and beer and water and
all
these things are very
important. It all helps in the end. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it comes down to community and connection with your community to be able to do that. So that's advice for the young promoters coming up in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like get connected to your community and build that mailing list and use it. Use Meta sparingly.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's worse than unnecessarily spending money on Meta.
And, you know, Meta, you can't trust it. Like,
no,
the algorithm, it sucks. I'm anti-algorithm.
Yeah.
Like, I hate it.
So you don't really use it at all?
I do buy ads for sure, but, like, I do specify.
Because I've been looking for, like, another ad source, so.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice?
Is there?
Yeah. I mean,
other than partnering with locals is a great idea.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do social ads, is there any?
Yeah, I guess you can do.
Bands in town. Like the bands,
bands in town.
Is always good, I think.
Yeah, like Google ads, I guess you could do stuff like
Google
that.
Google ads. You can also do like the, I hate to say this, Spotify ads, you know.
Yeah, or YouTube ads. People
YouTube
do that.
This show's on Spotify.
Yeah. Pardon?
This show is on Spotify.
Oh, I mean the lovely Spotify.
No, we trash Spotify all the time. Download us on Spotify.
It sucks.
Exactly. So yeah, you can buy ads there. Yeah, you know. So there is other sources, but Meta just gives you a little bit more specific regional adding, you know, if you want to target that town, you know, an age group.
I mean, I do it, but
I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll sometimes wait too. Like when we announce shows, sometimes within that first 48 hours, 72 hours, you can kind of see what the interest is pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so if there's a way in which I cannot spend any money on Meta, I would gladly save that.
So it'd be like the last couple of weeks leading up to the show if it's needs a
push.
You can do it that way. Or if once you kind of see ticket sales taper off, maybe after that first week you can maybe let's put $50 into an ad or whatever just to see if it moves the needle at all. But I mean nothing's worse than spending money on a Meta ad if you don't need to, and I would much rather
give it to
buy more carrots and salsa even if I have to.
Yeah,
I do buy ads for my upcoming shows with the whole list.
Yeah.
So I do spend quite a bit of money on those because then it's just sort of like the whole roster's right there.
Mm-hmm. Getting the word out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's an unnecessary evil. Mm-hmm. I'd rather do it old school a little better, but it seems to be that everyone's on their phone now.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's on their phone.
It's the way to get people's attention. Sad, I know.
Yeah,
but it's true.
But yeah, I've got to experiment more with the bands in town and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just try other things.
Bands in town is good. It's a good one.
Just looking for like low cost.
No, and I don't. I'm not sure what their costs are, but they are good. They go directly right to they notify you if you're nearby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do an ad on there like that's based on genre? And
I
not,
think so.
Not
it's not
your
an ad.
Following,
it's sort of like
kinda?
You put your tour in it and all your dates, and then the people that belong to Bands in Town, it'll say Tom Savage is coming to Gananoque, and anyone that's nearby will go, oh, he's coming to my town.
I think that's how it ends up on Spotify too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The two are connected.
They're connected.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
To check that out. Touched on the shrinking of venues in town, and we just lost the Grad Club, and Verge will give you a chance to speak to your history with that, just all the amazing shows that you put on there over the years. I know you haven't been there for a couple of years now, but like, just thoughts on your time there, good times, good shows that you came through there. It's a long list. Top three shows.
Oh my goodness, that's not fair.
Well, we can edit this so you can think about it for a half hour.
I don't know if Mark and I have that much time today.
We're gonna get a parking ticket.
I'm still pretty fresh off the loss of the Grad Club. It's kind of an emotional conversation to have. And, you know, the legacy of that place, I hope, will live on for in the minds of those that were able to connect and get married in that space and see music in that space. It's the people that make a space. It's a building, but, you know, it's the community that made that space what it was. And it's a sad, very sad loss to for all of us. But as far as music goes, I mean, there's so many. Like, I liked when Gord Downie played there. That mm-hmm. was pretty beautiful. It was solo.
Yeah.
Kind of a magical night. It was just Gord and a guitar, you know, singing for Waterkeeper.
Yeah.
Keeping the lakes clean. And
mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful night. I like those surprise nights when Owen Pallett was playing there. And he had Grizzly Bear, a band from New York, open up for him. And I just remember my jaw on the floor. They were just brand new kind of band. And now, you know, I think they've disbanded since then. But
they got pretty huge.
They got huge. Yeah. And I just was like, who are these people? Am I like, I was standing in the audience. And then Owen kind of runs up to me and goes, they're really great, aren't they? I was just like, yeah, they're really good. So that was a pretty, I mean, Constantines were always like crazy good. The Stars, when they first hit the mark with Set It On Fire, played there, and it was just jammed. Half Moon Run, like, line up around the corner, like, the building to get in. Always, also the same thing, line up around the block to get in to see Always. There's so many great shows. So many. NQ Arbuckle, it was like our house band.
Yeah.
And just packed it every time. And just the sing-alongs with NQ and the gang. It was just always a good vibe that those nights. Shad, when he played there, was crazy. I could go on. There's a lot of great so many great memories.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. I mean, I left 2 years ago, and I've kind of like moved. It's sort of synchronicity. I'll say this in a happy note, is that like it was really hard for me to leave a space that I was madly in love with for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But when I moved, I just happened to be when the Broom Factory, and this was totally coincidental, Broom Factory opened. And Mark welcomed me with open arms to like kind of transition to working there. And I've been never, I gotta tell you, Mark, like, I'm so happy working with you there.
Yeah.
Just sort of, it's a very safe space. It's a happy space. And I couldn't be happier.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I like that it's all ages. It's not alcohol based. It's an early show. Early show. Children are welcome to come and enjoy the show, which I really like. It's not a bar at all. It's a space, right, that everyone can come to. So I just want to say thank you.
Awesome.
It's been 2 years now. I've been there, and you know, it was really hard leaving that legacy behind. And like my DNA was in grad club for so many years. And I love that. I love all the people. That's to me, like, the people, the community. You know, there was a lot of hardship near the end for me, and really heartbreaking for me to leave there. But like I said, I'm so happy now. I'm doing what I love to do, which is strictly music now.
Yeah.
I just book bands, festivals. As I got the honor to curate the new big festival in Kingston, which is a great honor to be booking for my hometown, this big new venture for Kingston, the Road Trip Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm in such a great space now, and I will always cherish those grad club memories, and all of that music that happened in those doors and that space. It sounded great in that room. Like, that room sounded great. It was a living room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
know?
Was. Yeah.
So that's my words on the grad club.
Right
so.
On. Well, things are always changing and moving
on.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking,
so
but it is what it is, and yeah. Anyhow. Oh, DFA was good also at the grad club.
Okay.
That was DFA nights. And CFRC co-promoted that with me. And there was body surfing there in that living room. That was crazy.
Well, just to talk about the, well, the venue, you know, we lost Blue Martini.
Yeah.
Which was 2 weeks after that we did the fundraiser for the grad club that ironically, you know, it's just like, it's like, yay, grad club.
I know.
And then like, the place we do it is
like. I couldn't believe it. I know. They did that on the sly. I had no idea.
And then the mansion, which you put a ton of shows on in the mansion, Mark.
You have a huge legacy there too, Mark.
It's crazy. But I, and the broom's great. The overhead can be a bit high, I find, for, say, young bands starting out.
Yeah.
You know, touring DIY acts. And I've had this idea in my head for a while, and I was just talking to Luther Wright about this on the phone and what he's done up in Wakefield with, Wakefield Does Wakefield. It's like a micro grant sort of system that they have going where they, there's an arts organization up there that helps fund shows around the area. And
that's a great idea.
There's a movie on it that we were going to show at the film festival, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Anybody interested?
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. I want to get him on the show to talk about this, too, but we're talking about, well, he's going to put something together to bring down here and try to convince to do Kingston Does Kingston. But I wanted to ask you if you ever had any of those conversations, like say with the city of Kingston or something, like a micro grant system, where just to give people starting out opportunities to, you know, just to cut the cost of doing the show for the bands and things.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean I haven't, but I think
it's a good idea.
It's a good idea. Yeah. I think a big thing is like Musiki's is one venue.
I was going to say,
So I haven't done a whole lot there over the years. We use it for Spring Reverb, which is a little bit different than just doing a one-off show. But we actually just did a show there on Friday. And it was quite small. I mean, I think
it's
a small venue. Yeah. You're never going to have a big show there. But they do have a PA that's available to be used by the artists if it's fairly entry-level PA, but that's fine. Yeah. It's a small room. So you can do a show there for not much money, or if you have volunteers, you know, taking tickets and doing that sort of thing. I think it is feasible to go into that room and do a show for.
I guess it would be the room for, like, teenage
just to get
band
your chops or,
like
or just anybody, some, really. Kinda, anybody.
And you can work up.
Yeah.
There's also the Merchant.
Yeah.
There's also Turninog does stuff now too. Like they have a room that they're doing shows out of.
I think
Monty's. Like,
I guess you call it. Yeah.
And if you look at like the grad club, before you were doing shows there, who would have ever expected that that would be a place where you would not just have shows, but have like high caliber
major shows
acts playing there. So I think a lot of it is, I think the first thing I said in here jokingly was like, oh, we could do shows in this room, but we're sitting in a room right now. It's what, maybe 20 by 20 and like it's got a CFRC banner on the wall and it's cool and quirky and all those things. So it's like, I don't think, I don't know, somebody listening to this show or somebody sitting at home right now that's just realized the grad club and the mansion and Blue Martini have closed might be thinking of opening their own space. And it doesn't always need to be like, you know,
perfect.
A commercial space.
It can be somebody with an idea and a cool room and like
a garage.
Yeah. Most, you know? most bands are not bringing out like even over 100 and 150 people, like most bands are playing to small audiences. So I think we could, or I at least could argue that Kingston really needs a larger venue, but I think it also needs like a smaller one. And some of the places that you both mentioned as well
could be
candidates to step up to maybe fill the void for what the mansion and the grad club have left behind, like maybe the Tiernanog or some of these places. But, you know, I think also at least when I go in and use a space, it's nice to have some basic amenities there, knowing that we're dealing with not always a band playing their first show, but, you know, some of the bands that Verge mentioned want a place to put their backpack and have, you know, a bit of a green room, even if it's even if it's a closet, you know, a bit of a green room and a place to park and, you know, some basic amenities. So I think some of these spaces that we mentioned, if, you know, if they decided they wanted to put a bit more money and time into these things, I think very easily they could fill a void.
Yeah. I'm thinking like, well, I'm always thinking about like the city stepping up and contributing to the cause of this, ideas I've had, like the micro grant or fund matching or things to, or just to also to, I mean, it's a bit, I was talking with Moira about this on the other episode, but like just ways to generate more work for musicians, higher, you know, living wage for musicians. And that's a bit of a different animal, like just music as a thing happening.
Yeah.
Outside of concerts, yeah. You know, like a development ground for artists too.
Mm-hmm.
So you get up to the point where you can do a show at the Broom and get 100 people out or whatever, mm-hmm. you know.
But I think like I don't know if the city has a warehouse full of PAs that aren't being used any longer at the Grand Theater or something like that. I think a lot of venues, if they wanted to take a shot at being a live music venue, could really use a thing like a PA, obviously.
Yeah, and a decent PA.
And some basic
yeah.
lighting.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some people that could come in and build the basic stage. Although that's like a lot of venues don't even, when you're starting up, don't have a stage. But no. even a corner that has a, you know, it's a little bit curated and looks like a spot where the band's supposed to be set up. So
yeah.
I think without it costing a ton of money, you could get something pretty basic set up.
Yeah, so know. Yeah, no harm in having more of those spaces, yeah. but also to have like a bit bigger of a space too.
An important yeah. space I think we've forgotten to mention is the toucan.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, back when I was, before I was ever a promoter involved in the music industry, my musical education came from the toucan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just went down there. There was no streaming back then or anything, and just went down because there was live music playing there, and they're still doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of local bands are playing there.
That's
and,
true.
And yeah. it is a really great space to get a following. And then, you know, maybe, you know, you move to the Broom Factory. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like build that audience is what most local bands want to do mm-hmm. when they're yeah. starting out. And like you play at RCH and like, yeah. and I think that RCH and the Toucan do a really good job at that. And you know, it is a bar atmosphere, unfortunately. So it's 19 plus, but still like, I think it helps really develop those artists mm-hmm. in this town, in this city.
Yeah, so. For sure. The Toucan's yeah. awesome.
We, I think, promote one another really well because the Broom Factory shows end at 10.
And then everyone
and
goes
then,
to like,
Toucan. Toucan doesn't start till 10:30. So it's yeah. actually around a 15-minute walk, so you could go yeah. finish your drink or buy a record, and then.
And I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, I'm headed over to Toucan now." Like,
yeah,
I've heard well, so many people say that.
Our show there recently, I'm pretty sure Joey from the Millwrights ended up at the Toucan.
Yeah, like it sort of like works. Yeah. It sort of works really well that way. So.
Okay, well, I think we should wrap this thing up here. Again, a couple of seconds from you guys, just promoting your things. Verge, what do you got?
I've got Cat Clyde coming on May 24th.
Okay.
Incredible artist out of Winnipeg. And then I have, oh my goodness, I've got Wolf Island Music Festival coming August 7th and 8th with Shad headlining, Ken Yates, Georgia Harmer.
Nice.
Tiny Horse, our local heroes. Actually, that's another festival that's about 50% is local. And
that's
I always
great.
Try and have a Wolf Island contingent playing. And this year it's Brody Christ, who's my neighbor on Wolf Island. So
nice.
he's opening up the day on Saturday. I also have Hoxley Workman coming to Signal Brewery on an Sunday afternoon show.
Sweet.
Which is pretty nice, actually.
Is he going to play down on the by the water? Or in the building?
I think in the building. That's,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, I guess they got all the PA as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be fun. So yeah, I've got a few things coming up. How about you, Mark? About 500 shows coming up?
We have quite a few. Yeah, like we're now probably same as you, like looking at the
festival.
Fall
well, spring
but
reverb
even, like, starting
soon.
To even look into the winter for some of the long-term
yeah.
stuff. But yeah, with
oh, yeah.
spring reverb coming up.
I didn't even mention my winter. I've got stuff announced from
yeah,
November.
You're probably going home after this and announcing like five shows.
Yeah.
So like never.
Like ends. Bahamas, I've got October. I could go on and
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we only have so much time.
Yeah.
So.
yeah, spring reverb, end of this month. We have Bedouin Sound Clash headlining, who's really good fit for us. They were one of the first bands we promoted 25 years ago.
Awesome.
When they were still, my band actually played in a battle of bands against them at Queens, and we both lost to a Rush tribute band.
That's forever, hilarious.
Both
I didn't
forever
know that.
Scarred.
That's
yeah.
so funny.
Forever scarred. So that's coming out. Dirty Nils on that bill as well, a cool punk band from Hamilton. And then Billy Bragg this summer at the Spire, and then
awesome.
Just tons and tons this fall. And you know, if you go on the Broom Factory page, it's got both lots of Verge's shows mm-hmm. and our shows as well. So it never ends.
Yeah, I was going to say Bedouin Sound Clash is closer to your heart. My Rush pun there.
Yes. Well played.
Well played.
That will be edited out
yeah,
of the episode.
Done. I get rid of that one.
Or just do a slide whistle thing.
Yeah. Okay. One hand clapping.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us, Tom. Thank
See you.
See you.
Thanks again to our special guests and our listeners for joining me on Leave It All on the Stage today. Be sure to stay tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM for our next show and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platforms, YouTube, or on my website, tomsavage.ca, where you can also sign up for the Leave It All on the Stage newsletter and get the latest news on my music projects, access exclusive music, and read more about my thoughts on the life of a professional musician. Want to join me in a conversation? Reach out through the website. In the meantime, support your local artists and have a great day. Got by kneeling at the back of the church, feeling water on your brow with its healing. It hurts at first, a sharpish pain that returns as a thought that the needle in your skin won't bring you closer to God. And I watch as your hand turns full circle. I'm hopeless with no coffee and a medical text. It's too easy knowing life from blowing off the rest. And the riddles in the pages leave it too much to guess. And the worry cracks and fracture from your hip to your chest. As I watch as your hand turns full circle.
That gets used a lot at a radio station is the verb broadcast, as in to broadcast. Ever wonder about the past and future tenses of that word? Are you tempted to say, I broadcasted my show, or my show will be broadcasted? Well, actually, most standard English dictionaries say that the past and future tenses of the word broadcast are exactly that, broadcast and not broadcasted. So, if in doubt, it's probably okay to say broadcasted, and there are a couple of dictionaries that allow for that,